it up. It's free. Please take a flyer. There's a transportation study for most of this area where your businesses are. That will be Thursday night as a presentation from DOT. And the community board is instrumental in working with all the local workforce organizations, workforce development organizations, and they train local workers so that they can help you hire local workers that are right for your businesses. And there's a card in back. Thank you very much.
Well, let me first say thank you to Dominic and Susan for inviting us here today. Let me introduce Michael Hyman, who's our Deputy Commissioner for Tax Planning and Audit and Enforcement, Chris Brown, who is our communications staff, and Owen Stone, who is our press person. Usually don't come with a whole entourage, but they were all very interested in coming to this board. He told me it's the best board you can come to, and we want to come, so that's why we're here. I heard a little bit about what you're interested in. I thought what I'd do is talk a little bit about, in general, about property taxes in the city, and then really open it to questions for whatever you want. If I am on too basic a level or too complicated a level, just let me know, and we can just go on to your questions. So, as many of you may know, the city is divided into, well, let me first start, the city collects about $33, $34 billion a year in taxes, of which property makes up somewhere between $15 and $16 to $17 billion. So it's by far the single biggest tax in the city. Just so you know, income tax produces about $6 billion, corporate taxes are another $4 or $5 billion, and then there are a whole series of other taxes. But the property tax is by far the biggest. Property is divided into four classes in the city. Class one is residential units that are one, two, and three family homes. Class two is primarily rental properties and co-ops and condos. And by rental properties, residential rental properties for the most part, some of which have businesses in them as well. Class three are utilities, and class four are all the other commercial properties in the city. We value the properties in many different ways, and this is all a result of state law. Let me talk about state law and property taxes. You really have to, when I came to the department about 8 months ago, I thought I knew about 50% of what I needed to know. And what I quickly discovered, primarily from being tutored by Professor Hyman over here, is that I actually knew about 10% of what I needed to know, and that 10%, most of what I knew was wrong. In order to understand property taxes in the city, you really have to be a combination accountant, lawyer, seer, prognosticator, crossword puzzle expert, and anything else you could do. It is, I think, one of the least transparent laws that we have, and it's a shame because it is it affects all of us, and very few of us can understand how your property tax bill is arrived at. Now, I say that this is a product of state law. We are big believers in the department and transparency, and when we try to, even we have trouble, quite honestly, describing this in somewhat of a transparent way. So we have these four classes of property, and from them, as I said, we raise about somewhere between $15 and $17 billion. Class one properties, just to sort of give you a flavor of the difference in how classes work, class one properties, which are one, two, and three family homes, are valued based on comparable sales. Remember, this is all by law. This is not by choice. This is all by law. Comparable sales, meaning if, you know, we find out a bunch of homes that are similar to the one you live in, and we value it. And that's the way you get your value. Your assessed value in that class is 6% of your market value. So if you have a home that's worth $100,000, the maximum assessed value we can place on that home is $6,000. And that won't necessarily be what your assessed value is, because lots of it has to do with the history of your property. Okay, so that's basically class one. Class two, for the most part, which consists of rental buildings and co-ops and condos, interestingly, all of the properties in that class are valued based on income. or based on income and expenses, but right now we do it based on income, and which makes a lot of sense for the rental buildings, because that's what they are, income-producing properties. By law, though, we are required to also value co-ops and condos based on their comparable rental, what they would be if they were a rental building as well. And not only that, but if they were built before 1974, we have to value them as if they were a rent-regulated building. So you wind up with many fancy co-ops, you know, in Midtown Manhattan and up in Midtown Manhattan that are being valued as if they are rent-regulated buildings. Now, again, I tell you that's by law. So we have this whole class of properties, and Class 2 has a few other kind of quirks to it, but for the most part, we now have these buildings that are all valued as if they are rental buildings, and I will tell you for co-ops and condos, we've come to a valuation for them of about $60 billion. When if we had valued all of them based on comparables, as we do Class 1, their actual value would be about six times that, of $360 billion. So we then get a value for Class 1, and I'm sorry if this sounds very confusing, but that's what it is. We take these values, and unlike Class 1, which has a maximum assessed value of 6% of your market value as we find it, Class 2 has a maximum of 45% of your assessed value. Anyway, that's Class 2, and that's sort of similar to Class 4. The Class 3 is a mixture of utilities that has very few properties in it, and then Class 4 is all the other commercial space, which also has a maximum assessed value of 45%, and is also valued based on the income approach. How do we get to the actual values for these income buildings? Is that we require everybody to file what's called a real property income and expense statement, happily known as the RPIE for those of you who actually file them. You're required to file it by September 1st, you're required to file it online. And the way we value your property currently is we take essentially the income from your property and we apply to it, there's a bunch of steps, what we call a gross income multiplier, which has to do with various studies of what we think buildings with certain incomes should be worth. And it's very complicated. There are many categories of these things. Within each category, there are 10 different levels of what the multiplier could be. And essentially, we come up with all these numbers, and we calculate it, and we come up with what the value of your property is. And then for your assessed value, we take 45% of that rate. That's what happens. That's the way we do it. That's the way your property taxes work, in a nutshell. As complicated as that sounds, I'm sure I made it about 100 times easier than it actually is. And then the city council, every year, sets the tax rate that applies to each of the different classes of property. And that rate can be anything, quite honestly, at the end of the day, but that's what they set. And the shares between each class are set in various ways and can only move up or down a certain percentage in each year. In the last couple of years, for instance, the Class 1 share, while it could move up a particular amount by law, and which the City Council has passed a bill and the state legislature, I guess, has gone along with it, that hasn't moved the Class 1 shares at all. Give you some sense of the size, we have approximately 1 million properties in the city that we assess every year. If you look at the total market value, and now I'm including co-ops and condos based on their real actual, what we consider to be their real value, meaning comparable sales as opposed to this sort of fictitious rental value, the total value of all properties in the city is about $1 trillion. Those are your stats. That's the way we do it. Tell me what your concerns are, and let me see if I can. Well, I will tell you right now, I'm sure I won't be able to alleviate all your concerns in any way, shape, or form. I can tell you why things are. We can come up with ideas for what we could do. So if anybody has any questions, if there's something else you want me to talk about, yeah.
I have
a... Can you tell me your name just when you do
it? Well, my name is Julie Winters.
Nice to meet you.
I have a business on Black Rock Space. 117. The real estate tax, I had no idea what, when I signed the lease, I wasn't quite sure what it all meant. The real estate tax was a lot lower, and I was supposed to pay 100% of the increase. So every year, the tax has doubled. And I'm also leasing the store next door. I have to pay the rent for that as well. And the tax now is $83,000 a year on top of the rent. So I'm a managing agent. What,
we have families.
Why that is? And she said, well, they have buildings on that same block where they pay way less than what they're paying 178, 176.
Well, I mean, I can't speak to your specific building. We're happy to take a look at it. In general, I think that the lessees, the renters of these buildings, when you rent your space from your landlord, if you have a lease in which all of the tax increases passed along to you, then the landlord is less inclined or under less pressure, honestly, to challenge, if we think it should be challenged, some of our valuations. He might be if he was, if he or she was absorbing the tax. He or she has a complete pass along, and so it may be.
The tax for the whole building is $200,000, and we ended up paying.
I honestly, I will say, you know, give us afterwards. Give us the building address. We can come back to you with some information. But I'm not going to know the specific building and the specific situation until we go back and take a look at. You know, all properties are entitled first to come to us. What we do is we publish a rent roll, the rent roll in January, the assessment roll in January, and we publish in a tentative rent roll in January, and then final assessment roll at the end of this month. The final assessment roll is what the taxes are based on. So there's going to be a final assessment, and as I've described in each class, then there's going to be an actual assessed value, which is going to be some percentage, and any tax rate will be applied to that. Between January and the end of May, first owners of buildings can come to us and say, you got it wrong. Here's why. Here's some additional. And even if you don't, and then if we agree or disagree or lower it, but don't lower it enough, they're also entitled to then to challenge our determination and go before the New York City Tax Commission, which honestly has the final level, the final say. You can still not like that and then challenge the tax commission's burden of court, but there are a whole bunch of steps that you can go through. I think part of your problem is you've got a landlord with not much incentive to do that. Now, they have some incentive because at some point, right, you may say, forget it, I'm not interested, and they still have to find another tenant who's willing to pay what they're. So probably everybody has some incentive to keep their property taxes down as much as possible, but not as much of an incentive than if they were paying it directly. So, yeah. What's your name, sir?
I'm Megan Joy. I've got two businesses here, one on Orchard, one on Fenton. What my landlord was saying today was, what's the name of that form that you hand in on the income that you take in the building?
Repeat the question.
So what was the name of the form that you used to submit your expenses and income to us?
He was saying that when he hands in that RPIE every year, claiming what his income is, the rent basically he takes in for the entire building, right? He says even if he says it's a certain amount, the city always comes back with like, no, it's not. It's this amount, and it's always higher. So then he says he inevitably always has to hire a
certiorari attorney.
Yeah, what was it?
Certiorari
attorney. I still can't say it. Who then studies the real value or the real income level and then goes back to the city and says, see, and then over the course of 5 years, the city will pay them back whatever they find is the difference. That payback is never trickled down to the tenant. That's ever...
Well, it surprises me to hear, begin with someone saying it gets paid back over 5 years. This process generally happens in the same year that the assessment is made. So if what he's doing is what you say, what he's doing is challenging our value with a cert attorney that goes before the tax commission and says, finance got it wrong, lower it. And if it's lowered, it's generally lowered before the final assessment roll comes out, and those taxes, that value applies to the coming year. So right now, if your landlord has challenged that and he's won, there will be a value that's lower than ours that comes out at the end of May, and that's going to be the final assessed value, and that's what the taxes are going to be based on for the year 2010-11, right? We're going to be in the fiscal year 2011. So I'm not sure where the 5 years comes from. I will say that, just like your landlord, we're not happy when landlords challenge our assessments and win. And I don't mean because we're unhappy that the assessments are lowered. It makes me unhappy because we got it wrong.
Right.
We are trying. I mean, I think we do a pretty damn good job. We don't. I mean, we lose tens of thousands, but we're talking about a million properties, and we're talking about, I forgot what it was, 40,000 challenges in years, and something like that. I think it's something.
You have a different number?
But we definitely do get some wrong.
Because what's to say, like now, he's at half of his building right now is market rate tenants. You know, our base year was like the year after we started our lease. We've got a 12-year lease. So, I mean, in 8 years from now, or whatever, 6 years from now, when our lease is up, like, those numbers can, the assessments can keep going up and up. The more market rate tenants he has going in, the more renovations he does. You know, it's like, can I turn around and say, no, don't put $1 million into your building? I don't want you to, because I'm going to be paying the difference in taxes.
Well, I hate to say it, but that's really, it has been set up, it's really an issue for you and your landlord.
Yeah.
You know, we are going to go in and take a look at a building and say, what have you done to it? What tenants have you gotten into it? That's the way we value the building. If you've made improvements, if you have tenants that are paying higher rents, then we're going to increase the assessed value. How that gets passed along to you, you know, if you think about it, it's very hard for the city, the government, to get involved in that relationship. I appreciate that you get screwed. I get it. I really understand. I don't know. I don't have a great solution.
You can tell the city council to not raise the tax rate anymore.
Your city council.
Fair.
I'm gonna,
she's over there.
Wait. I'm going to call Rob, and then Eleanor, and then Alex.
I have four businesses in the Lower East Side.
Your name, sir?
Rob Shamlin. And it's basically, with every retail space I've seen, it's all the taxes, the increases are always passed down to the tenant, no matter what. It's just the way it is. I've put to multiple spaces, every single lease I've ever seen is passed down retail space. And the problem that you said is there's not a real solution, but the problem is when you're a small business, it makes a small business not viable. And then, you know, the more money you put into that business to make it, you know, a good place, well, all of a sudden your taxes go up even higher. So what happens is it rewards you for not building a nice place, number one. And number two, you have nowhere to go, really. So, I mean, I think it has to be, like Megan was saying, the city council, they determine, you know, the tax rate. That has to be taken into consideration that without, you know, when these taxes keep going up, it's going to put small business out. And then what happens?
Well, I think, look, I appreciate it's an issue. I'm not sure that I agree with your statement. When you put money into your business, that's going to make your tax rate go.
Well, it makes
the assessment.
Yeah. Well, no, it won't necessarily increase the assessment. I mean, depending on what kind of money you put into it. If you're still paying the exact same rent, then that's the income. If you are improving the space in ways that are fundamental to the building, then yes, that would also increase the assessment. But it's the owner is putting in major system overhauls and things like that, that's really seriously going to increase. But I don't doubt that your taxes have continued to go up. I mean, first of all, you should understand, as tax increases come in, there are transition values, so it all doesn't come in 1 year. Right? It comes in over 5 years. Right? It comes in over 5 years. But each time you're looking at, you know, year one it's 5 years, then if year two goes up, you're talking about another 20% in every year. I hear what you're saying. I don't know what to tell you about
that. The solution would be that they keep an eye on those tax rates and then make that determine on how business could stay open. You know, if you look at the Lower East Side, there's been a tremendous amount of closure with this, especially, you know, retail for fashion-based clothing is, forget it.
And the only thing that can stay open, more or less, is our restaurants and bars, which I happen to love. But, you know, it hurts everyone else.
I mean, the taxes, your taxes are going to be based potentially, increased or decreased taxes, are going to be based potentially on two things. It's going to be based on the tax rate and or the assessed value that we can, which can go up or down. In the past several years, they've mostly gone up, the assessed value. You know, people don't understand, understandably so, but because of the way the laws are, that, you know, in the last couple of years, while things haven't been great, your taxes have still gone up, your assessed values have still gone up, because it's phasing in over a period of time what we didn't throw in right away in the beginning. So people just don't get it. You know, the good times, people, I don't say people don't care, but they don't care quite as much. And the bad times, they say, how can my taxes still be going up?
Maybe there are incentives for landlords to not pass on to tenants, or, you know, with rebates or whatever else. I mean, I have no idea what the solution is, but I know that at this point, it's very difficult to get a lease. And you know, market rate is no longer viable, at least not here.
I'm going to go back to something that Megan said, and just using Megan's businesses as an example. So, say the owner of the building gets the tax bill and passes it on to Megan, then doesn't tell her that he is going in front, he's getting his lawyer to go in front of the tax judge and saying this is too high, does get it reduced, but never even tells her. But she's only seen that first bill.
Well,
and how do you protect tenants from that happening? Because I bet it does happen all over the place if they only have to see that, you know, if the landlord just says, here's your bill.
Well, one way you can do it, or is one way you can start, our website has every single building in the city. You can go on and look at any building you want and look at the assessed values of any building you want. So what I would very much suggest to you is you go every time and look at your building, see what's happened. See if, you know, if you have a landlord who is passing along to you rent that he shouldn't, I mean, taxes that he shouldn't, or he or she shouldn't be, that's a real serious issue.
And what kind of recourse is there for a tenant if the landlord is passing on the taxes that are original tax bills versus the reassessed value?
The main recourse is to sue them. Right? And, you know, I tell you that knowing, come on, the city should be doing something for me. But I'm not sure that we can right every wrong. I mean, this is a contractual relationship you have with your landlord where the landlord is violating the lease. Right? If we hear about that, I don't even know that I have any power to do anything about that. It's a civil issue, honestly, between the landlord and the tenant. My guess is we could come up with something. I mean, one other issue that you might want to look at is that, you know, the landlords are all required to file this form, this real property income and expense form. If they don't file it, we assess these properties at, I won't say the highest value you possibly could, but at a very high value. And then they may pass that along to you as well. And, you know, there may be something that you can do. I mean, one of the things that we are going to do, which we've never done in the past, is we are going to start penalizing landlords who have not filed this RPIE. Because one thing is we want our process to be much more efficient, and it's incredibly, it's more difficult for us to assess these properties when we don't have data. So we're trying to, through monetary fines, which I will tell you that if anybody tries to pass along to you, if they ever get that, I don't think that they would have a right, I haven't seen anybody's lease, but I don't think they would have a right to pass that along to you. So I would be very careful about that. And again, you can look on, you know, these websites and our website under these properties. Yeah,
well, you
Lena, you already had. Give me one second. Let's let somebody else.
I own a property on Second Avenue and Second Street. I pay half of the income that comes in the building in taxes. Half of the building is not rented, and I've been property tax is now over $30,000. The income is $60,000, and that does not have anything to do with the expenses of the building itself. And I wonder, why is it so high?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I can't comment on an individual building. But again, if you give us the address of the building and all the details,
well,
we will get back to you.
We have been filing
every year the RPIE, and also we have been challenging this every year, and we have had no no benefit from it at all.
Well, I mean, I guess this is harsh, but my response to that is, oh, we got it right, you know, to a certain extent. I'm not sure that's intent. Well, I'm just saying, if you've gone through the whole process and you've taken it to the tax commission, you know, you can also challenge the tax commission's ruling in court. It becomes expensive. It's, you know, I get it. It's really hard. But let us look at your building. You know, give us the address afterwards, and we'll take a look at it. And we'll get back to where we are.
We've been challenging it, by the way, for the last 20 years.
Yes,
ma'am. Is that after the same thing as this lady said? I have a house in Christie, and I have even four rent-controlled tenants because my house is 110 years old. I have nothing against it. I'm here also 50 years, and I'm an immigrant, so it's no problem. But I have Mr. Redfin. I pay him for $75 every year to try to an application for correction of assessment. I did RPIE or whatever it's called, everything. I don't have a big income on the building, and every year he goes to the, before the committee or whatever this is called, and we have never gotten an abatement, and he never comes back. And it's the same kind of every year my real estate tax goes up about $1,000 or $2,000. It does not go down. He was trying to get me a correction of the assessment, and we cannot get it. How is this?
Well, I'm gonna repeat, not in a satisfactory way, what I said before. I can't tell you how you can get it. You have gone through. I can't tell you that you're entitled to
this
it.
This man is the most famous lawyer for this in town. I hope he had some clout. It doesn't seem so.
Well, I hope he doesn't have any clout. I hope, in particular, we don't have people with clout, our assessors and the tax commission. Honestly, people can poo-poo this unless you can show me in our agency we're doing something wrong. That has nothing to do with clout.
Thousands of dollars every year. It seems to be like automatic. I don't take much more in every year, not that it would justify a raise like that.
There is nothing automatic to what we do, but we are happy, as I said, with any property of anybody right now. We will look at your property, and we're happy to talk to you about it and tell you why we did what we did.
Whom do I call then?
We're going to take your name afterwards. You know, to get everybody. We'll take everybody's name and everybody's address,
okay.
And you give us your contact information, and we'll get back to you.
Okay, thank you,
Alex.
Commissioner Yellen here.
Sure.
Oh, okay. Now I have four things to say. The first was a question, and that was: is there an appellate process for the landlord? And I wonder if that's what Megan was speaking to. After the cert attorney goes to the tax commission for an abatement of their assessment, for lack of another description, and it's declined, and is there an appellate process whereby he pays it and he has an attorney go back and say, that was incorrect, I want you to reevaluate it?
The appellate process from the tax commission is to go to court.
Well, I assume it's an Article 78 proceeding, but he's entitled to an appellate process. So there is a possibility of some correction after payment.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what Megan was speaking to. So there's always the possibility that the landlord can be reimbursed for something he's already passed on in some percentage, or maybe in total percentage.
I assume that could be, right? I assume a few years from now, right, the landlord could get back something, and whoever comes back and passes that back along to the tenant.
And then really two things together is, I don't know that it's necessarily your responsibility, but it seems to me that in some way the tax imposition on the landlords is regulated based on what you're saying. This is from a novice's perspective, it seems to me. And it seems to be that in some way the city needs to do the same thing to the landlords in terms of regulating what's passed on. Because right now we have business owners who are sitting here who I think are probably paying a variation of 20% to 40% to 100% of that tax increase, and there's no regulation. And Rob is right. It does affect small businesses much more than it might affect big businesses, but it's certainly affecting all businesses, and it seems to be affecting them randomly every year. The other thing is that there should be some sort of creation of legislation, so where the rental agreement is for 100% of an increase, of payment of the increase, then that person should really become a stakeholder in the filing of the RPIE or the contesting of the RPIE, because the reality is that they are the ones paying the tax increase, not the landlord. And I understand you penalizing the landlord, but it doesn't really help the rental person. And like I said, I don't know that that's necessarily your job to figure out how to rectify. It may be something that has to be legislated either by the city council or some other legislative body. And finally, I also live in a very small co-op with a rent-stabilized tenant, a rent-controlled tenant, and then 10 co-op apartments. We make the exact same amount of income every year, except that we assess ourselves to pay for, maintenance, because at this point we have to assess ourselves for everything because our maintenance, as it was, wasn't sufficient, and we can't increase the rent on the two apartments we have. So tax is a significant portion, along with our mortgage, of our expenses every month. You're barely getting by on like $2,000. Using $2,000 for utilities and other necessaries other than special projects a month. So, we are very much affected by the taxes. I'm not quite, I think we actually go and have a small abatement every year. So I'm not quite sure who your attorney is, but we are being significantly impacted. So I realize what you're saying when you say, talk about the uptown condos and co-ops, and the reality is down here for the most part, the condos and co-ops may not exactly be of the same model that you're describing.
I hear what you're saying. And when I talk about the uptown condos and co-ops and the Class 2 issues, there are also incredible inequalities between single-family homes and Class 2 mm-hmm. properties. So there are all kinds of inequities. But I will comment on a couple of things. The issue of a tenant essentially having standing to challenge the tax increase is an interesting idea. I'm not sure what you said before of this one is particularly workable with, the city legislating that you can't pass along property taxes.
Pass along, but that it's in some way regulated to a degree, because it's obviously it's not regulated. It is simply left as a private, contract between landlord and tenant. And look at the disparity that we're getting in terms of people saying I pay 100%, I pay 40%, I pay 20%. And essentially the onus has now fallen to the renter to figure out what the tax obligation is of the landlord before they enter into a rental agreement. And that is inherently unfair.
I don't agree with you. I don't agree that it's unfair. I'll just be blunt. I don't think it's unfair. One of the issues I have with what you're saying is how much interference should the government have in what essentially is a private negotiation between a landlord and tenant? And I will say these are very difficult questions. But for instance, if we regulated, we said to landlords, everybody, you could only pass along 20% of any tax increase. Well, I'll tell you, if I was a landlord, when I entered into the lease with you to begin with, your rent would be twice as high as I was going to charge you to begin with. Because I would say, well, I can't do this. The government tells me I can only do this. But I know I'm going to have that kind of expense, or I'm anticipating it, so I'll raise your rent to begin with. And there are other myriads of ways to get around it. So
I'm not
going to
do it.
Yeah.
You know
what you're working with.
Yes.
You know, your business, what you're working with. All of a sudden, you get an 80 grand note on your head in a year.
We were working with that.
All right, let me ask you this. If
I can't raise my prices to substantiate that kind of an increase.
In some of your leases, I'm sure you also have, if the landlord puts in major improvements in the building, they can pass that cost along in many leases. Well, are we going to regulate whether a landlord is allowed to do it? If you decide you don't want that to happen because you don't want to increase your rent, are we going to say, no, you can't do that? I mean, these questions are always incredibly difficult. There are, honestly, two sides to all of these things. I really am sympathetic to this issue. I don't have a great way of solving some of these problems. Yeah?
This is a simple question because I've learned a little about the classes. You have two stores, two-story stores, 20 by 100 foot, right? Two-story building, both floors commercial. Five-story building, first two floors commercial. Exact same size. The one with the three
apartment, storage apartment is going to have a lower tax than the one that's a freestanding, you know, two-story, completely commercial building.
First
that's
all,
a class four, and the one with apartments above it is a class two. So even though the landlord's got more income, no, let's say the rents are exactly the same, but he's got rental income from tenants above. But the guy who wants that store, that his property tax is going to be less than the guy who's just a two-story building, well, commercial. That's true, right?
Yep. I can't answer that for two reasons.
Well, it's a class four, one class
two. For two reasons. Number one, the history of the buildings would have a tremendous amount to do with what your taxes are. Well, the history of the building, one could have been built 15 years ago. They might not have ever had the same amount of taxes. And until we actually looked at the buildings, I'm not going to be able to give you an answer that says yes or no. Nothing within property tax is a simple question.
Two different classes, right? In general. I know, I'm giving you an example. One has a five-story building, three floors of residential, two floors of commercial. One's a two-story building with just two floors of commercial. They fall into different classes, right?
Yeah, they should.
So based on that, they're going to have two different tax rates.
They will have two different tax rates.
Right.
Right. They won't necessarily have two different assessed values, but they will have two different tax rates, depending on what the city council determines the rate for class two or class
four. So you have two identical stores at a different tax rate. One doesn't have a apartment.
Right. Just like in this city right now, you can have residential properties, co-ops, condos, and single-family homes that are all worth exactly the same thing and can pay four, five, or six times difference in property taxes. That's the way the system works.
Fix the system.
Well, you know, I would love to fix the system. It is an extraordinarily political issue. Right? I tell you, out of the 1 million properties in the city, it is, 650,000 are 1, 2, and 3 family homes. And the other 350,000 are not. Think what you will, but yeah.
According to Chen Chinatown Partnership, two questions. It's been alleged in Chinatown that the Department of Finance single out Chinatown specifically for higher taxes. And I don't know if this rumor is that true. Chinatown's for a 19th century building, so I think since the press is here, it would be helpful to put this to rest. I mean, our evidence of looking at database, we couldn't make head or tail whether Chinatown is the world of that. Second part has to do with your question about the interference, which means that it's also been alleged that Department of Finance working close with other city agencies that whatever possible to try to raise the taxes as possible. So when it comes time to the final review after City Council set the tax rate, who does the ultimate determination? Are there other agencies involved that ultimately adjust, let's say, your about your uptown, downtown, midtown versus what the lady was talking about? Where Chinatown is in a poor area, why is it the taxes should be similar or higher? I have a letter from an owner here that wants to know they've been here for three generations for 25 years, and he said the rent go up by large amount, like midtown, driven by demand from booming financial services demanding for tenants, but they never went up by same amount in terms of rent as a landlord in the Chinatown area. Our rent goes up, similar to inflation, but the real estate taxes are not same. So those are basically the three questions that I think would be helpful from the community point of view.
Let me see if I can remember your three questions.
The first one is about Chinatown being singled out.
So let me state categorically that not only is Chinatown now singled out, no neighborhood in the city is singled out. Let me state that. And I will tell you, it's the first time I've ever heard an allegation like that. So when you say it's alleged, I'm really curious as to who is alleging. Who is saying that? There's no truth to that whatsoever. Tell me what your second question was.
The second was, who sets the final rate? Meaning that you work with other agencies to tweak the rate.
Well, let's talk about two things. The Department of Finance puts an assessment value on your property. We determine your market value, and then there's an assessed value that comes from that. That assessed value can be challenged first to us, then to the tax commission, and then to a court. The city council sets the tax rate that you're going to pay based on whatever the assessed value is. Department of Finance does not set that rate. And then your third question was,
does that rate change?
It can.
I mean, the uptown downtown issue, why, you know, the blanket approach. I think the clarification in terms of not the city council set the rate. Is there any other city agency that's reviewed to let you adjust for that, or is that pretty much it?
Well, by the time the rate is set, there should be no other city agency that is, your assessed value should be set by that time. If you challenged it in court, that can go on for some period of time. But there's no other city agency besides us and the tax commission that goes in and changes those rates. And we've already done our work by the time.
I guess the question is,
well, the rate can get changed. I mean, for instance, look, 2 years ago, or last year, the city council sent different tax rates 6 months into the year.
That's been my question.
Well,
what determines that rate?
The city council and the state deciding, you know, revenues are needed, and that's, you know, it's a political issue, and it's a revenue issue.
The last question is basically, do you adjust for now locale differences? For example, if the area is full of 19th century buildings, and other than income, other than the assessed value, we make a factor for the locale.
I mean, we always look for comparable buildings in whatever particular area is there. I think most of the time we get it right, sometimes we get it wrong. But, you know, if you have specific buildings, again, come and talk to us. We will.
Thank you, Mr. Frank, for being here. I think it's a really fascinating subject and complicated, too. My name is Javier. I'm the general manager of a building in Christie Street. You said that it's all income approach, right? The way that it's assessed.
Right now, that is the way we do it.
Now, and there's a multiplier that you said that it applies, and it ranges somewhere between 2 to 10 or 11. Who determines that multiplier?
We do.
And how do you arrive to that?
There are complicated formulas that we come up with based on, he's the expert in this world, but, you know, it's very, very complicated to explain. And why? Because we're trying as best we can to estimate what we think. There are different approaches to how you can value a building or anything that is generating income. It doesn't have to be a building. There's no perfect approach. For a while, the city did it one way. A few years ago, we changed to what we call this gross income multiplier. I'm telling you that we are probably going to change that starting next year. And we are going to look at something called an income capitalization approach, which takes into account both income and expenses in a particular building, or in particular areas. Now remember, we value 1 million parcels of property every year. Many of a good chunk of those are done based on different modeling that we come up with. And so we can get it wrong for particular buildings every once in a while.
What is interesting is that, you know, leases hold people hostage for a long period of time. So if your income is decreasing steadily because the economic conditions of the neighborhood went up, you still stop the lease. Inevitably, those property taxes will remain steady. So it just doesn't make any sense, these valuation models that I'm assuming that there must be other types of valuation, such as the way the building is built, the cost approach, or the, I'm sure, real estate experts would have a better way of assessing, or maybe a combination of many of them, to get a better sense of the real value of the property.
I'll tell you, we are real estate experts, and the vast majority of income-producing things, including property, are basically done on an income capitalization approach. Like, we are probably going to go to, we actually don't think that going to that model is going to change the values all that much up or down. But we think it's an easier model to well, in a sense it's more complicated, but in a sense it's easier for people to understand. There's no easy, quick way of doing this. And, you know, I know I shouldn't say this, but when you say you're held hostage to your lease, I get it. I understand it. Those are free market decisions that everybody makes. I can't protect everybody from your free market decisions. I know it's really hard, and I get it, and I really am sympathetic, and trust me, I've had business that failed, and I understand that. But the government can't be in here trying to interfere with every single free market transaction that takes place. So I understand, but when you sign your 5-year lease, that's what your obligation is going to be for the next 5 years.
but it's based on the based on the value it was generated as a property income, right?
The landlord's taxes are going to be based on
highest use. That's what they call real estate exit. It's called best and highest use.
Well, we don't do investment based on best and highest use at all. It's just not one of the approaches that. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Bob Zuckerman. I'm the executive director of the Lower East Side Fund. Thanks for coming today. I wanted to ask you, are there any downsides at all for a property owner to challenge the assessment?
No.
No downsides whatsoever.
Well, it depends on what your relationship is with the attorney that you hire. Most of these attorneys take a percentage of whatever they may save for you, so there's probably no out-of-pocket cost. I hate this. You know, I can't stand it, but I get it. But there's no real downside to your challenging that.
Okay, and given that it's late May that the final assessments are reported, is it too late now for a property owner?
Yes, for this year.
Now it's too late.
What is the time period?
March 1st or March 15th.
I forgot what the date is that they had to challenge the first assessment roll that we put out in January, the tentative assessment roll that we put out.
So property owners have 45 days or 60 days? Or
it's from January 6th, I think we published, to March 15th, so it's almost 2 months, in which to do that.
But the commission can go back and look at the previous 2 years.
Yeah, but you have to challenge by March 15th. You have to get your challenge.
The RPIE is February.
No, the RPIE, you have to get in by September 1st. We use your RPIE. So see what happens, right? We use your RPIE to then assess your property that we are going to announce to you on January, in the first week or two of January. And then people will come in and say, you got it wrong, you got it this. We say, yes, you're right, we'll change it. They say, no, you're wrong, I'm going to take it to the tax commission. They take it to the tax commission. They have to challenge that by March 1st to 15th. I forgot what the date is. And then based on all of that happening between January and the end of May, we come out with the final assessment roll, which is what your taxes are going to be based on for the year, for the next fiscal year, which runs from July 1st of 2010 to June 30th of 2011. Yeah.
Maybe this is a lot of context, but, I mean, it's since you're the finance commissioner, and I'm kind of confused as to what you do. Like, are you just creating revenue for the city? Or, because so far you haven't really offered anyone any advice on what they're doing. I mean, it just seems kind of like a, hi, here I am, and there's really nothing, sorry. But,
well, you know? Interested that that's your response. First of all, I'm here trying to explain to you the way the situation works. You don't like the situation, I can appreciate that.
Well, that's but the thing, like a lot of us don't like the situation.
Hey, easy, Chris. I can take care of this, thank you. And that's totally fine. I understand that it's an emotional issue. I get it, I respect it, but I'm telling you that we value properties based on state law. Okay? You want to change the way we do it?
Change the law.
Right? You want to change the law? Vote for people who you think will change the law. You know, it's a pretty simplistic issue. Right? But I sometimes do things that I don't agree with. Right? I sometimes have to do things in finance that I think are wrong that I wouldn't do if I had a different law. But I have no choice. That's what the law is. And that's what I do. And other people have set the law, and presumably we voted for the people who established these laws. So what I'm saying to you is you can go, here are a few practical suggestions. Right? You can go to your landlord and say, I want you to challenge this. I think it's wrong. I don't know what's going to happen. You can go to your landlord and say, you didn't file this form, and all you're doing is passing along this to me. Maybe you get 100 people or so that's happened to, and maybe there's some way you can go into court and say, look who these guys are. They don't pay any attention to this. They're just letting this. I don't even know what the cause of action might be, but maybe you can come up with something creative.
Renegotiate.
You can try to renegotiate your lease. That's it, you know. I don't want to suggest that because I have no idea whether a landlord solicits you. Maybe they will. Maybe they won't. I appreciate, you're right, I don't have a lot of practical suggestions for you. I really don't. I'm trying to explain to you the way it's done.
But basically, what you're saying is by challenging, like having the landlord challenge this agreement that we make or this tax that we're paying, we're challenging you. Am I wrong?
Oh, but that's okay. That's you're entitled to do that. You're right. And if we get it wrong, we should change it.
Okay.
And I'm not, I encourage you to do that. I'm not trying to discourage you from doing that. Quite bluntly, I've been the finance commissioner for 8 months.
Right.
I have a lot of skin in this game right now. But if you came and showed me that, you know, 50% of the time we get this wrong, I would love to know that. right? That means we got to change the way we do it, and we're doing something correctly. I don't think you're going to find that, but you know, you have all of these rights and exercise them. The problem is you don't have them. Mm-hmm. The landlord sort of has them, and you have to somehow use moral suasion or some other way to get. And even then, you know, you're not necessarily going to get any relief. In most of the cases, our values are upheld. You may not like the way we do it. You may think we should challenge it. You may say, let's start a movement to change the way state law values things. Let's start a movement to say that the Class 1 owners get a much bigger break than the Class 2 owners, and let's change that. You know, I can tell you, Class 1 property owners in this city pay, they have about 40 or 50% of the value, and they pay about 15% of the taxes. Right? Class 4 property owners, commercial property owners, have about 20% of the value, I think, and pay 40-some-odd percent of the value. You know, now that may be right, may be wrong. It's all a bunch of political decisions that are made in how property taxes should be apportioned. It's not easy. Yeah.
When will this change with the rent control and the rent stabilized? I have a rent control woman whom I love, don't worry. She's 85 years old. She pays $170 rent. With the same kind of apartment, I have another tenant who pays $2,000. It is not fair. It is not right. I cannot change it. I have to have an income. I mean, and the city is nuts. I mean, rent control, even stabilization, this is nuts. No. This has to change.
I will say you can get 1,000 people in this room and the differing views on rent control and rent regulation laws are, you can get people in here who would, you know, go crazy when they heard that. I'm just saying, I hear what you're saying. You know, I hear what you're saying.
Because it's not right. I don't want to...
Commissioner, how much longer?
I have as much time as you want to. Can you tell me what you want me to do?
I'm so sorry.
Okay. So I'm the one that I guess I often hear from a lot of the small businesses that make up our community and there are of our community. And if we take the position that we think this system is kind of broken, because it really doesn't seem fair, I think, to many of us, that a landlord might be, you know, getting increases in rent and not be paying any of the increases in the tax. So is our option, our best option, to go to City Council? I mean, how do we deal with this?
Well, I think you have to decide on what's your strategy. Is our strategy to somehow get legislation passed about what tax increases can be passed along to a tenant and what can't? Is your strategy to try to form I'm not sure I should be in the middle of your advising this kind of thing,
but
you have to think, is your strategy to get together and say, forget about City Council, we're just not going to do this anymore. Or we're going to look at every single property online and we're going to start pushing back. And those of you who have not challenged these things in some way, I don't know. There are, you know, I can think of 5 or 6 different strategies, but I think that's the first thing you have to do. What's the real goal here? I assume the real goal is to pay less rent and not to have as much of this property tax passed along. That could be one goal. Or one of your goals could be, you know, we think property taxes are simply too high. Right? That's a different approach, right? That's a total City Council political issue. That has nothing to do with your own. Or that's a state law change and saying to the Department of Finance, we think it's wrong how you're valuing these properties, and we think these properties should change. Or we think the proportion paid between the classes is completely wrong and unfair. Why should Class 1 only pay 15% and Class 4 40% and Class 2 40%? Or, you know, there are a million different ways that you might be able to approach this. There's not going to be a simple solution, and it is not something that in 6 months.
Commissioner, we got two over here.
Sure.
Can I just add one thing? I'm sorry. Could you address how you assess empty stores, because that's come up a lot. It's based on income, and what has come up is that people feel that there's no incentive for some of the landlords to rent out as opposed to the empty.
Well, there's a vacancy rate that we attribute to different kinds of classes of property. So that is what
low.
We do with that. Excuse me?
But it's very low.
Well, it's different and different. We do it based on surveys, and we do it based on whatever information that we have.
So it's not so painful for a landlord to keep a place empty.
Yeah.
It may not be.
Right.
It may not be in certain cases. I'm sure it depends on the individual. This isn't just like some landlords afforded apartments that they've kept, you know, residential apartments that they've kept empty in order to take them out of any rent kind of rent regulation.
I'm going to call them myself.
Yeah. I should also say that while I haven't been helpful in terms of, I guess, what's your name?
Matt.
Matt, I guess I haven't been helpful to Matt or anybody else in coming up with a great solution. The city has, over the past 2 or 3 years, passed some laws that have given relief, some relief to small business owners in terms of how your taxes are computed, how you have to pay, what's the income by which you don't have to pay any tax. And the city's corporate tax burden, I'll call it, city's corporate tax payments is about $4.4 billion a year. Okay? And over the last 3 or 4 years, the city has enacted some laws which have given about $220 million of tax relief to small business owners. And there's another bill, I think, in front of the city council now of about $40 million. Is that right? Or am I missing on that, right? The one that, a proposed legislation.
The S-Corp retail.
Yeah, the S-Corp retail.
Yeah, so, 3 or 4 million.
Right. No, it's 3 or 4 million? Oh, is that it? Okay. So it's about $260 or $270 million of tax relief to basically towards small business owners over the past 2 or 3 years out of a $4.3 billion tax bill. So there has been recognition that small businesses can be suffering in certain cases, that we definitely want to encourage small businesses. And so the city council and the mayor have passed legislation over the, mostly in 2007, I believe, that, as I said, has given relief of about $270 million. Yeah.
Susan actually asked a question I wanted to ask because it's very similar. Because we were wondering if, you know, having vacant storefronts, we're encouraging landlords to keep their spaces vacant, which is not what we want, obviously, but, you know, it actually keeps their taxes lower. And I just wanted to make a quick comment. I mean, the commissioner has been really gracious to come here to give you this information. And the key is to use this information to go back to your landlords so you can negotiate, because you obviously have power once you have information. And I don't think a lot of you knew that you could get this information with the actual property tax rule. And you have recourse to negotiate. Renegotiate leases, I mean, whatever. And that's what he's saying. They can't do everything for you.
The property tax cannot be negotiated.
But it can be challenged, and that's what he's saying.
I do it every year. That's fine.
But he's encouraging you to keep doing it. He's not telling
us. Most
encouraged.
And you actually, and I'll tell you, you will probably get rewarded at some point for perseverance. So I encourage you to continue to do
that. As I said before, I'm also encouraging you to go online and look at your property.
And actually, this is a really quick one. It does sound like you're using a couple of different valuation approaches already. It looks like we're one. And I'm a little familiar with valuation principles in general. It looks like you're using for certain properties an income generation, sort of a cash flow, discount cash flow, similar type of valuation. And other ones, you're using some sort of a market assessment in general. So they are trying to, but obviously this, your feedback is really important to get them to change things to be more accurate. So that's all I really want to say.
Let me just make one comment, because if I misspoke, what I heard you say, we are not trying to use different approaches. We are told, essentially, by state law what we have to do. Now, in income-producing properties, there are various ways that we can come up with an approach, and we are going to change probably the one that we are doing. But, you know, by state law, for instance, as I said, we have to value co-ops and condos as if they're rental buildings.
But they're based
doesn't
on
make any sense to me.
But it kind of is already sort of based on valuation approaches.
A particular valuation. Right. Yes, sir. Did you have some? I'm sorry.
No, it's Mary.
Oh, yeah. Well, Mary had her hand up first.
Okay, Mary. It's very gracious.
There's reasons for it. My name is Mary Spink. I run an organization that develops low and moderate income housing. I have different tax problems where that's considered, because everyone thinks that tax abatements are an easy thing. But we also manage property. And we manage property that's taxed. And all of our properties that have retail space pay tax. To have a commercial lease sometimes will take me 2 years of negotiation between, especially depending on the level of rent, even though what we consider a lot of rent in one of our buildings would be minor compared to what market rate is. But it's still fairly high, especially if the, you know, the places are large. Obviously, there are large buildings, commercial buildings, throughout the city of New York that do, this happens on a regular basis, and they pay less for taxes than most of you guys do. And part of the reason is that people come in, they want a business, they want to open a business, and maybe they show something to their attorney, and they sign on the dotted line. From what I see here, we have really one long-term option, which is to change the law. And maybe short-term, I don't know who could work on this and who would do it, but if there was a way to set up you know, a bunch of attorneys that would work, you know, inexpensively to help with the leasing situation so that our stakeholders, our commercial, you know, people in the in our area in Community Board 3 would have some kind of help before they signed a lease. Because I understand once you sign the lease, it's very, very difficult to renegotiate. It's just the way the market is right now. The landlord's not going to renegotiate. He'll let you leave and he'll re-rent. Those are my ideas. On
the value on air rights assessed?
It's part of the formula. Part of the formula that we
everything's
look
part
at.
Of this conglomeration formula.
That's city county, not you guys.
we value everything. We're the ones who value property.
So again, I'm going to go back to a small building that has happens to be.
And I'll do skew your value.
Right. So those air rights are worth something, and that tax gets passed on to the leaseholder. Again, this is a problem for me because you're taxing air rights that can be sold to a guy who's building a skyscraper down the block. The building owner could do that. You guys are assessing those air rights, which could be millions of dollars. I don't know the exact number. And then I know that's getting passed on us. How do you guys put value on air rights for something that might never come to fruition?
Let me turn the question around this way. Did you know that before you entered into the lease? I mean, you seem like you really...
Actually, I did.
Let's assume you do.
I didn't know that at the time.
But let's assume that you do now.
Most of these people in this room don't know much about that kind of stuff. You learn, unfortunately, by, how do we say,
getting burned.
So again, you're not going to like this answer. But now everybody's much better educated than one. Trust me, now that you guys now rank up in the top 2 or 3% of people who understand property taxes in the city. Even though you're probably sitting there thinking, I don't know anything, I still think that sometimes as well. So now you know all this, and now you're going to go out and negotiate a new lease.
Negotiate, not renegotiate.
I mean, no, I'm saying, you now it's new business, right? You're about to do this all over again. What are you going to do? Your landlord says to you, here's my lease. Right? You pay for the property tax increase. You're going to say, well, if these air rights and the finance department is all screwed up, they're going to charge me this. And the landlord says, well, tough, that's the lease.
I agree with you. When I'm talking now, I will not, you know, I'll cut the finance department off, you know, city council, state laws, this and that. But this is you guys. This is something you guys control on assessment. And you're assessing the value of air rights that really might never be used.
Let me tell you this bluntly. I don't know. I'm just going to tell you this right now. I don't really know how much of a percentage of air rights come into the way we assess these buildings.
This undeveloped air rights, potential air rights, often it doesn't go into the value. There's air rights that an owner can potentially earn immediate revenue from. It can, so it varies.
I mean, pretty much any guy can sell his air rights. So there's a lot of development in the city, not so much now, but based on current real estate.
I will just tell you, again, while admitting I don't know the answer, out of all the issues raised here tonight, my guess is that one is not a major problem for anybody. That's just my guess, but I don't honestly know the answer to it. You think I'm wrong?
It does vary a lot. It can be complex, but it's not like any air rights that are building out, this doesn't automatically translate into additional value, but it can in certain circumstances. Owners have some immediate income sources that can be generated from, I think, more near-term developmental, you know, rights into airspace.
Sure.
I just want to say also, here's one other class you missed, is class 2C.
Low income.
Yeah.
No, you are right. Within, there's an expert. Within class 2, there are various other subclasses.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Within this same class, that sometimes is not transferred. Those are buildings that's transferred from the city of New York to housing companies. And sometimes they remain at class 2. And even sometimes when you submit the income statements, you will find out that the bill, you know, I'm not sure how it's done, but it's more like a cookie cutter. So the building comes up, they say, we value it at $4 million. We're going to tax you based on $1,500,000. Now, this is a building that is set its income by the city of New York. It's rent stabilized. Makes $12,000 a year. $12,000 a month. The tax, the valuation of this building, although it comes from HPD into this program, is supposed to be 2C, even if it's not a co-op, but it's a building that comes through DAMP, is assessed at 100, and this I have in my hand. The taxes for the year on this building of a restricted income building is $139,000 a year. And we're not talking about water yet. We're not talking about any other thing at all. And I think there is a way, besides the fact is the original point of small business stuff, I think we should get together and push for legislation that would give them, if not the landlord abatement, but whatever they pay as taxes, the city should give them, allow them to deduct that from business expenses just like normal taxes have deduction. And maybe your office can't do it, so maybe we'll have to do it. That might be one other thing for this committee to talk to our representative to make sure that that is done, that tax. Somebody called it abatement, but it's just something you can deduct from your taxes. But going back to this building, there is no way this building has a mortgage of over $300,000. Its income is $12,000 roughly. That's just on a good month. The taxes was assessed last year for $139,000. I could read it here because just in case you're talking from my hat right here, I brought it with me. Okay. In 2003, after the 421A went out, it was valued at $236,000. By 2007, it doubled. By 2008, it doubled again to $854,000, the amount of taxable. This year, 2010 of January, the $1,008,000, and at the percentage that will be charged on this building, that's why it comes out to $139,000. Now you take $12,000 a month, the highest amount that is given, times 12, it's $144,000. Now you tell me what happened to this building. This building is 10, and you know what happened to it? Because the financier paid that taxes that you charge, the building cannot pay anything in that building. The heat alone is $24,000 a year. So, what would happen to this building? A foreclosure action is charged against this building because it cannot pay its monthly bill. And that's what's happening to small, like that lady's talking about, and many others. And I think finance department should not be so stiff about the law. It has to see there are buildings here that generates taxes to it. But if they don't survive, there's no money you're getting. I remember I was an organizer back since, and I'm going on, but I have to give you this. When we start organizing buildings back in the late 60s, early 70s, the reason why we had so much vacant buildings is because landlords were walking away from their buildings. The tax was too high, the water was too high, the rents were low, and it's going to happen again. Tax abatements are being given to the forward city Ratners and the Trumps and the, you know, all of those guys. Now, the buildings today are paying those rents for what you, I mean, those taxes for which the city expects to collect 30 years from now. So who has to pay 30 years today? The small business people. So maybe it needs legislation, or maybe you can't answer it to us, but at least this one building, and I could give you the address, somebody has to take a look at it, because the people in the building that put their sweat in this building from the beginning of the day to the end should not be treated this way. $139,000 is unconscionable.
Well, I'm not, I appreciate what
no, you're just
saying.
No, I'm just giving you information. I don't necessarily need
you. Let me comment on one thing that you said, which you said we shouldn't be so stiff about the law. Think about, and I hear what you're saying, and honestly, when we think there are real policy reasons and there is an interpretation of the law that will give us what we think is a better result, we are open to interpreting the law. But I will tell you, we will follow the law. And your and the idea that we shouldn't be so stiffly connected to the law might work in this case, but how about when I decide that some rich developer, you know, should get something else? And you're going to say, what, are you crazy? And I'm going to say, well, he came to me with a really good argument. And I thought, well, the hell with the law. You know, I'll just do this. It's a very difficult road to go down, because once you go down that road, you don't want me to have incredible amounts of discretion. You really don't. Because then it becomes me deciding what to do. I'm one guy, not elected by anybody. Right? You don't want me to have all the... I may have a view of fairness that has nothing to do with your view of fairness. Very, very dangerous thing for me to have all kinds of discretion to do whatever I want. And while I hear what you're saying about this one building, I am actually glad, even though I think the law is screwed up in some ways, that, you know, there are rules that we have to follow, and there are rules that you can then challenge, and you can tell us you think we did it wrong. And while I agree that I now have to come before you and tell you I don't have incredible answers like I'd like to for my friend Matt over here, I'm not sure you want us to be able to say to me, you know, Commissioner, don't be so tough on that law. You know, you don't have to follow it in this particular case, because look at the unjust results. There are a lot of unjust results that come about sometimes. It's not perfect.
What I'm saying is, in terms of the law, there's a building out here. And it's in certain...
I got it.
The appraiser, whoever is the appraiser, use some discretion and formulas.
Let me just say, give us the address of the building. We will take a look at it. I can't tell you exactly what it is.
Yeah. I agree with you. I don't want government involved in my lease negotiations. You know, I don't want there to be other ones that set standards and what they say. You know, capitalist society, and I want free will. But real estate taxes weren't always in leases like they are now. Like now it's standard. You go into a lawyer's office to sign a lease and it's like you have to pay a certain amount of the increases in real estate taxes. And you can negotiate maybe how much. And Lord knows from now on there'll be a cap on my number, you know. But it wasn't always like that. Like 10, 15 years ago, these guys weren't paying, right? Like, I want to know where the shift happened.
I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, but lots of things change in business, right? Things that existed or didn't exist 20 years ago, 30 years ago, change over time through standards of practice. One landlord starts doing something, other landlords say, oh, that's a good idea. The next thing you know, this becomes the standard for
things. Is there landlord discretion to stop that tax on the tenants?
Well, let's put it this way. It's your discretion whether to take that tax or not. And you can look at it in two different ways. Right? The landlord could say, here's my deal. You don't like it? You don't have to do it. Yeah, the landlord has discretion.
It is the landlord.
It's a lease. It's a contract. There was
a woman who was supposed to come here tonight, and she couldn't because her kid was sick. But I just wanted to pass on her situation. She is the tenant in a strip mall owned by a large group of cooperatives. Okay, so a bunch of co-ops, and they own this little strip mall kind of right in front of them. Not attached to the co-ops, I'm not naming names. They are, in her lease, now again, I know it's an individual lease, so you can't really have much to say on it, but they want her to pay a portion of, they're basing her percentage of real estate taxes on not only what the value of that little strip mall is, but on the assessment and the value of all of the co-ops, which are residential. Does that make sense?
Depends on what the lease says. I can't give you an answer. I mean, this is a privately negotiated. If I could look at the lease, I'd give you. I probably wouldn't because it's not my job. But you know, take the lawyer and say it's going to be in the lease. So that, you know what that is.
Capitalism.
Let me just say before I'm happy. Does anybody else have any questions?
Yeah, one last. Question.
I just had a really just a quick question. It's again on the challenges to the rates. The taxes are listed on the website, right? What someone's supposed to pay, or at least when it first comes out. Do you put down on those on the web that it's being challenged, if they are challenging it, and if there has been a change in the rate because of a challenge, is that listed on the web as well?
The latter is yes. The former is no. We don't update our records for a particular challenge. And first of all, I don't necessarily even know that somebody's taken a case to court. It's a, you know, I mean, we make a call.
Well, no, but I'm talking about, but I think, I mean, for the tenants, that might be a really good idea to say, okay, that this, the base rate that you're being charged, that your landlord has given you, has been challenged by that landlord. And it gives the tenant something to be looking at to say, okay, I need to wait on paying this tax bill that he's giving me because he may get a change in this tax bill.
Well, first of all, generally, the vast majority of these cases are done before the next assessment rule takes effect. So the challenge goes into the tax commission, who comes up with a decision, right, before you're going to pay these taxes.
Right, but so is the initial,
challenge?
The initial tax bill, is that the one that's put up, or is it the final determination?
Well, just remember, it's the assessed value, right?
Okay,
we put up the assessed value.
Value.
There's a role that you can see the assessed value.
Right.
Then we do not have a status which says that the owner has now come in and challenged this. But generally, they will do that by a certain date, and the tax commission will make a decision by a certain date. If it then goes to, and that's generally before these taxes all take effect, because remember, you're not...
Right, no, I understand that, but again, you know, going back to what I was talking about earlier, yeah, with the taxes being passed along to a business owner, even though they may change that...
Well, you could call the tax commission and say, has my landlord challenged this bill?
Right, I'm just saying, since you put everything else online, what would be the problem to just add this to it so that tenants would have this at their fingertips?
Could be an idea. When you say everything else, I don't put everything else online, and trust me, what I'd like to put online, mm-hmm, is going to cost me $100 million already. So let me make this comment, and again, it's going to make you really unhappy. I think that the role of the tax collector for the past 2,000 years has been one of hatred. These people are despicable, right? The time of Robin Hood, the time of Shakespeare, right? And I think that the people who work for me, that you guys should consider them heroes. And they're heroes in the sense that what we are doing is trying to collect the taxes that our elected officials have said are the appropriate taxes to pay. And when we don't do that, that means one of two things is going to happen. When we don't find the people or the businesses who are not paying their taxes, one of two things is going to happen. Either the rest of us who do are going to pay more, or we're going to have our services cut. That's it. So when people say, and trust me, this is not, you know, you are one of the most interesting group I've had, by the way, in the last 5 or 6 months. But I get calls lots of times talking about this. And one of the things I think about is, let's say we said, okay, you know what? I think you're 100% right. And what we're going to do is we're going to lower the taxes. Right now, I'm going to say we're going to take $1 billion off. You know, what small business owners are getting passed through, and all of a sudden, that's it. It's just going to disappear. Now what do I do? Now all of a sudden, the city has $1 billion less income. What do I do? Do we cut services? Do we raise taxes on everybody else? What do we do? There's no easy answer to this. And I appreciate that it is up to government and up to us to try to figure out where that balance lies. And that's part of why you elect your representatives, and that's part of why we get appointed and we try to think about things. And we do think about these issues and we suggest legislative changes. And I mean, but think about it at the end of the day. If I did for everybody what they wanted, we'd have no money.
Right?
So anyway, just before you say, just 1 second, ma'am. Just give me a second. Right? All right, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Every year, the New York Post brings a whole six bundle of houses, thousands of them, who have not paid their real estate tax and not paid their water tax. You must know that. In every borough, the bundle is that thick. They're supposedly in foreclosure, or they're supposedly have not paid in years. What happens to these houses? It's thousands of them.
Well, the reason they publish that list is because we put that list in the New York Post. Because they are part of what's called, I'm going to explain it to you if you give me a second. They are part of what's called part of our lien sale, in which, depending on the kind of property, if you haven't paid your property taxes, and there are a certain amount, if you haven't paid them for a particular time, or you haven't paid your water bill, we sell those tax liens, or we sell those water liens, and if you think property taxes are complicated, the way we do the lien sale is incredibly complicated. But essentially what happens is you either pay, or you're foreclosed on. That's what happens. That's right.
Amount of houses.
That's right. And we, so far, we published our lien sale list 60 or 70 days ago. As a matter of fact, the lien sale is going to take place in the next 4 days, right on the 10th. Right, and we published how many thousands? 40,000 properties, was it? Right, it was 40. Now, that's what it was. You shake your head. It was 40-some-odd thousand properties. And since we published that 90 days ago or so, we've collected $60 million, $70 million from these properties, and there are still 22,000 properties left that we will sell these liens to a trust that is financed through bonds that you don't want to get into this whole thing. But we don't sit back and just let people not pay their taxes. That's what happens. We go and we sell these, and we try to collect from the people who aren't paying their taxes, because that benefits all the rest of us. I can't stand people who don't pay their taxes. I'm sorry. I can't, because when they don't pay, you're going to pay more. Or you're not going to have a cop on the street like you'd like to, or we're going to close a firehouse. And I don't want to make this whole, you know, this whole parade of horribles, but that's the reality of the world. Right? The reality of the world is the city has a budget of $63 billion.
Big change.
Right? That's what we have. Excuse me? It's a big
change. Everything's connected.
Right? It's $63 billion that pays for X. Now, you could say city government is inefficient. You can say a lot of different things, and you're probably right on some of these. But that's what we have right now. If we only have $62 billion of income, there's $1 billion that we're short. Either we have to borrow it, which means that the city's costs go up every year, or we have to cut services, or we have to raise taxes on other people. Those are the only choices. There are no magical solutions to any of this. Yeah?
How many billions are lost by not lowering taxes and the businesses go out and then your revenue?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And I will tell you that a lot of us sit around worried about, not worried, but trying to study what is the effect of tax policy on the economy, on business creation, on individuals who come or don't come. Right? Those are very difficult questions that a lot of very serious people take very seriously. And, you know, I spend, you know, 1 day every 2 weeks just in meetings about those kinds of issues, about how do we figure out how to diversify the city's economy, how do we figure out how to keep the middle class here, how do we figure out how to keep rich people here also. I'll give you a few statistics, right? There are In 2007, there were 22,069 people in the city who made $1 million or more. 22,069. There were 3.5 million people who filed income taxes. Those 22,069 people represent 0.62% of all the income tax returns that were filed. Okay? They paid 51.5% of all the income tax. Okay? Now, you can love rich people. You can hate rich people. Every time we lose one, we lose a lot of dollars. Just the reality of it. And so everybody says, well, let's raise the taxes on the rich. And maybe you can. Maybe you can't. But, you know, if we get it wrong, it could be a real disaster. So there are really thoughtful people who think we don't get it right all the time. There's not necessarily an absolute right answer. You can get four economists in a room or four statisticians in a room, and they'll come up with four different answers. And we're trying to do the best we can. Sometimes we don't. And you should kill us when we don't. But it's not that there aren't really thoughtful people thinking about this kind of stuff very seriously, worried about the kind of problems that you are raising here tonight. I appreciate that I don't have wonderful solutions for you. Just tell you, this is the system we all live in. Yeah?
Just a quick question, and I don't know if you'd be the person or it would be the city council. Because it is a fact of life that it's in leases now. Landlord's not going to change that unless we form a small business union, which isn't going to happen. 100% of tax, property tax increases get past that. Is there any way you can assess taxes based on the revenue or the cost of the business itself, which would also be through impersonating businesses, because I think as I mentioned, the restaurants are going to make profits, so you lose all the small fashion stores and stuff like that. Is that a possibility, or is that not capitalistic? Or
I would be safe by saying I'd think about it. My initial reaction is probably not, to be perfectly honest. It's probably have to hire another 10,000 people, and, you know, then the city budget would be $65 billion or something, and we'd have to raise taxes just to cover that part. But I don't know. But those are all of these ideas, by the way, are worth thinking about. My initial reaction could be wrong.
I just want to say about the tax collector, I think many of us are not saying that it's a tax collector's fault or the tax collector's a bad person. I think it's more a system that will allow a property owner who may be making a tremendous profit to pass on the complete increase or most of the increase to a very small business and maybe put that business out of business. I think it's that the way the system is working as opposed to the taxes itself that we're trying to deal with that we're having a problem with.
I'm going to repeat this again. You're not going to like this, but I will tell you, that's free market capitalism.
I agree 100%.
That is landlords and tenants making decisions as to what I'm prepared to say, and I'm not sure how much you want government to interfere.
Unlike Megan, I want government to not interfere.
You know what? I bet, and I've been there, and I've changed my views, and I must have been a little on this. Interfere too much. It's not going to be a very happy group, because at some point someone's going to come along who's going to interfere in ways that you don't like. If we did this, that would be great. Right? We would say, you know, you got to keep your leases what they are. You can't raise rents more than X percent, and you can only pass along 15 or 30 or 50% of your property tax increase. Okay, next thing I'm telling you, you can't give your employees more than a 7% increase. Or you can't do this. You can't do that. It is a slippery slope. What?
So the city does to its employees.
No, the city, that's not at all what the city does. The city has a negotiating team that negotiates with unions, and they fight with each other, and they come up with a contract. I will tell you, I would be very happy if I could pay my employees whatever I want. I would. You know, if I could hire whoever I want. I can't. Because unions, and I'm not saying unions are wonderful. I'm just saying that's the system that works. They are a negotiating body. It's free market capitalism. Right? Just in that sense. The city has negotiators, the unions have negotiators, they reach an agreement.
When talk about diversifying the economy, what's happening in this neighborhood is landlords can get more rent. They're not going to renegotiate any leases, and they will if this goes empty, because then they can lease to a destination club that will pay much more rent, and that is why we think we may be losing a lot of our diversity. And it is totally changing the residential neighborhood.
And I agree. And that, I will tell you, I don't have a great solution for you today, but lots of people are thinking and concerned about this and trying to figure out the right balance between what do what I would call free market capitalism and recognizing we love neighborhoods, we love the character that neighborhoods have. It's part of what New York City is all about. Losing that would change the city dramatically and probably over a long period of time might destroy the city. You know, because who wants to live here? You know, at some point, there'd be a bunch. You know, just like our economy, we need to diversify, right? You know, the financial sector represents 5% of the city's corporate taxpayers and pays 41% of the city's corporate tax. Again, you can love the banks, you can hate the banks. They pay 41% of the corporate tax. And you know those guys I was talking about on the personal income tax side who made, you know, the millions of dollars? And most of them, right? So if you think about the financial sector, as the mayor has said, right, it's sort of our car industry. Yeah, you don't have to like that, and I'd love to see the city in a much more diversified economy, but that's what it is right now. And, you know, we've got to figure out how to broaden that and how to do it, but the facts are what the facts are to a certain extent. Anybody else?
I have a comment. I mean, sure. I think listening to this whole thing and being part of this experience with you, and I can see, like, there's a lot of pressure on you. Obviously, you work for a lot of elected officials.
I work for one of them.
Exactly. I just work for one of them. He's many people and a lot of money backing him. And I think about, what was it, a year ago, the council allowed this man to run and serve a third term. And in his promises to all of us, New Yorkers, was that he was supposed to be.
This isn't about
that. But that's not. But I think it is kind of the point. I think the point is, it's like, here we are, we're the small business owners. We are the Main Street, the people he promised to help and carry on. And we're coming to you, and we're hoping that you'll pass this along, you know?
Well, I will certainly pass this along. And as I will say, again, you know, since 2007, there have been four or five different laws passed that have brought about $270 million in lower taxes, mostly for small businesses. Mm-hmm. Is it enough? Obviously not, from what I'm hearing today. And, you know, I will tell you I'm a big fan of the mayor. And if you... mayors, presidents, governors, whatever you think about them, whether you like them or not, it's an unbelievably hard job. And the choices that they have to make, and you know, I like politicians, I haven't liked politicians, but the choices they have to make, and when I see the struggles that go on between, one of the great things about working in the public sector as opposed to the private sector is you get to deal with a question in the public sector that you don't in the private sector. And that question is this right? Is this right? In the private sector, you say, can I make more money for the most part, and is it legal and ethical? And some, probably small businesses as opposed to big businesses, also might say from time to time, is this right? But the question of is this right is incredibly hard. It's never black and white. You do something over here, that sounds really good, but it affects somebody over here. I'm not looking for sympathy, by the way. I'm certainly not looking for sympathy for the mayor who's, you know, wanted to do this and, you know, gets whatever service he gets from everybody. But it's not, you know, as I said, if we change this, right, if we did sort of what people are suggesting here and lowered property taxes or something else, and all of a sudden we had $1 billion less income, that has implications for all of us also in this room. And I just want you to a little bit understand. I'm not saying, you know, we all have our own personal issues. I think I'd love my taxes to be lower as well. But there are implications. Everybody wants their taxes to be lower. But there are implications, right? We lower our taxes. We have 350,000 city workers. Do we pay them less? Do we lay off 50,000 people because we don't have enough money to pay them? I don't know. Those are all implications towards lowering taxes. Maybe we should all expect less service. Maybe we have to do more things for ourselves. I don't know. There are, you know, there are real social implications and philosophical implications to how you run a government that everybody should participate in. And I really urge you to find your council people, to find your state senators, to find your state representatives, and tell them how you feel. Get together as a group. Come to a consensus. I guarantee you, if you sat down after this meeting, everybody wouldn't have the same view. Right? So you sit down, figure out what are the one or two most important things to you, figure out how to lobby, you know, your politicians, figure out how to lobby us, come in with other ideas. We are open to anything. I mean, someone said there was some publication or some announcement about us coming here today that said you have the rare opportunity to, you know, I thought I was like a one-footed penguin or something. Rare opportunity, some endangered species. We're open. We'll talk to you. We really will. We'll talk to you. You know, if everybody comes and lines up for 10 days and we may not be able to do it, but we are totally open And I look, I have 3.5 years or 3 years and 8 months left until I'm fired. And you know, that's what's going to happen. There'll be a new mayor, and that new mayor will fire me. I want to use that as productively as I can. I want to think 4 years after I got appointed that I've made a change. Part of that is getting people's opinions. Part of that is getting people's ideas, figuring out what we've done in the past. Maybe that doesn't work. What should we do in the future? We are open to all of this. Yeah.
You know, I just, I was talking about, as far as like, I think the landlords are in the same boat as we are, honestly. But what I'm thinking is that, are you guys, if there's a shortage of money, are you guys just raising taxes, or are you guys trying to find the balance between raising taxes and actually looking at what, how that affects everything?
Well, we're not looking right now to raise, I mean, I can't guarantee you. The mayor has said over the last few months he doesn't think that raising taxes is our way to sort of deal with this issue. And he has given each department, first in January and then again in March, a mandatory budget cut. So we had a $220 million budget, and we were asked in January to cut that by $20.5 million, and then in March by $18.5 million. We're fortunate in our department in that we actually can generate revenue, and we can come up with ideas to offset that. Many other departments just can't, and they have to slash their expense budget. So the mayor, to a certain extent, is trying to shrink city government a little bit. Think about that. Everybody says that sounds great. That means people are going to lose their jobs, right? And then people say, oh, no, how can we lay people off in this economy? I think what's happened in government and the private sector. The private sector has lost hundreds of thousands, millions of jobs. Governments, for the most part, haven't. There's a day of reckoning that's coming at some point, not just here, not just in the state, but in, if you read the papers, in every state around the country. We've all probably spent a little more than our means, and it's going to catch up to all of us at some point. We're going to have to figure out how to deal with that. Yeah?
The tax is implemented over 5 years?
I'm saying in class two, when you get a rent increase, that it gets phased in 20% a year for 5 years.
So how many more years?
Every year it changes. So every year if your assessment, right? So let's say, you know, your taxes year one was $10.
Right.
And in year two it's $11. Or the next year it's $11. So it's going to be $1 increase. So we're going to phase that in 20 cents a year. 20 cents a year, right?
There seems to have been very big increases the last few years because property taxes were raised by the mayor.
Well, this is the assessment. So if your assessment is $100,
right,
and your assessment goes up to $110,
right,
that assessment is going to go up $2 a year. What you're going to actually pay in taxes is now going to be $102. In the first year, it will be $102 times whatever rate the city council sets for your taxes. And the next year, it will be $104. But if you have, if it goes up again in the second year, and it goes up to, your assessment goes up to $120, we're going to start phasing that in. If it goes down, we're going to stop some of the phasing in. It's every single year you could have in 5 years, you will have five different phase-ins or phase-outs that are going on depending on what's happened to
value. Still going up on the 5 year, but you might start to come down as well.
Well, depending on how far the market goes. So let's say your property is worth $100 on day one, and now in the second year it's worth $150. And we start phasing, or $140,
let's
make
it
easier.
Let's say it goes down, because that's what's happening.
No, but let's say it goes up to begin with, right? So now every year you're going to have a phase in of $8 a year. Right? Now in the second year it goes down from $140 to $130. Your taxes, your assessed value is still going to go up, because we haven't reached that $130 value yet.
Right?
If it goes down to, so now in the second year, now you're at $116. And the third year, if it goes down to $120, even though we could have raised it $8 to $124, it's never going to be higher than the $120 actual value that you have now. So it'll stop. It'll still go up $4, and then the next year, if nothing happens, we won't go up. And remember, what I'm talking about is the assessed value. That's not necessarily the taxes. That's based on the tax rate. And that is not our function. That's the council's function. I mean, when I say it's not our function, you know, we have input into what should happen based on how much money.
Can we do one last question?
Yeah, the multiple that you talk about that comes up every year. What's the highest it's ever been? And
you mean the gross income multiple?
No, what you multiply the
tax rate.
The percent, whatever it is.
Well, it depends. First of all, it's different for every class. And I think the highest is, what, 17 or what's the highest? 17 or 18%?
13.7, like between 10 and 17.
I don't know, but again, it's for different classes, could have different, you know, so you would pay 17 or 13% on your assessed value.
So the now, class would change the rate?
The class.
The percentage?
Yes, there are different tax rates for each class. But also within, like class one properties, for example, they have limitations on how much it can go up every year. And in class 2A or B, right, there are also limitations. So in class one, your taxes can't, or your tax rate can't go up more than 6% a year or 20% over 5 years. In class 2A and B, it's 8% a year, but no more than 30% over 5 years. You know, they're all kinds of different. What? Sure, you can go look on our website. I will tell you, almost everything I've said is on our website. I'd be curious if you go and you can't find anything, send me an email. Tell me we think our website's great. Tell me you think it's frustrating. Tell me what you think we can do better. I'd love to get that kind of feedback as well.
All right. Okay. I really appreciate you.
No, thank you. It's my pleasure. Back, so this is not such a rare occurrence.
Fast public announcement. Anybody who has a bike chained up on the outside of the building, please remove it. The building needs it off. Okay, thank you.
Can I just say one more thing before we go? I said we would look at anybody's property if you want to give us addresses. But what you should do, please, what you should do is give these to us. Give us a phone number or an email. Guys, just 1 second, please. Give us a phone number or an email or something where we can get back to you.
But it's a phone number.
Thank you. For those who are leaving, please leave quietly. We still have a committee meeting, so we're going to be here for
a while. Are you the press guy?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I'm the publisher of the Amsterdam News.
Oh, nice to see you.
But I'm also on the board here. Okay. But someone brought up the New York Post and those multiple listings. Why don't community newspapers get this?
Well, it's expensive.
I know.
Pages, but what we do do is publish one small page that a lot of community papers do.
So it's going to be listed with the lien sale coming
in? It's not listed. It's
no, no, no. But the lien sale will be listed. Will be an ad in the Amsterdam News coming up for that lien sale?
No. The lien sale will be advertised.
Right.
Has been advertised in Amsterdam.
Okay.
But the 104-page advertisement, it's just too cost-prohibitive to have it. We have a legal requirement that says the international publication of John Strickland costs us $400 for each 30-day and 10-day requirement. But make sure that people know about it, that they can use it on the world as well, and we do want it in Amsterdam.
All right.
Yeah, I'm sorry I don't have it. I just put my info down here.
That's great. Thank you. Yeah. Right, thanks for the time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Very nice to meet you. This is my mom.
Hi.
Trusted property owners in the area.
Oh, my God. You got a lot of hats.
Yes. Live on the Lower East Side, but working on it.
Hey, committee members, you can't leave yet. We've got a few minutes.
Oh, that's good.
Okay, again, thank you. If you're leaving, please leave quietly. If not, sit down.
Excuse me.
Excuse me. Excuse me.
Gentlemen.
Dominic, this is your time, right?
Can you take it outside, please?
Excuse me. Please.
Thank you.
All right, let's finish this.
Oh, that was not nice.
You got a smooth walk.
Thank you for staying.
He came late. He doesn't get a pass on it.
You're the only one. Move up.
Come on.
Come on. Come on.
All right. This is going to be sort of weird because what we're doing is sitting sideways to each other. Yeah, well, I'll move with Pearl.
Thank you.
While you're moving, I just want to say one thing. I think we should a way of getting some of our politicians in the meeting so that we could submit a proposal or something like that, some kind of tax incentive where commercial tenants is allowed to deduct portion of that tax. Just like when you're filing your tax return, single person.
Okay, but let's get to rest of the story. Then we'll put that on the agenda soon. Yeah. But, bring it up. They were looking for explanations.
Come on,
Mr. Wallace. Okay. So you were finishing up your report.
Would that make the meeting quicker?
Yes.
Did we ever have a report from the
past? Yes.
Did we have any changes?
Not yet. They've changed.
They
changed.
Have you been providing that there was no
update? Yeah. Okay, that's fine. Because the latest draft is online on the website.
That doesn't help us.
We should take a look at it and see if there's anything we can do on the program.
It would be nice if they came to us and told us what the change was. And since they were on the agenda and they knew about it, then
that's only Thomas and Gene here.
No,
they've done it with the other committees.
Kim Solomon.
They've done it with the other committees, so.
We're not going to decide on Thomas and Gigi. I mean, the organization knows it's on the agenda, know that they made changes.
We are part of the organization.
You are. I'm not.
I'm representing CB3, but the co-chair is actually Thomas and Jim Solomon.
Sure. Did they like this?
Well, did we ask him to be here? Did he know about it?
If you want to bring that up to the group,
I will, because I am actually representing us.
I'm not sure how they got on the agenda. I'm not sure if we put them on the agenda.
We put them on the agenda.
Or each month. Okay.
So
you just
continued it.
Okay. That's fine. I'll talk to them.
All right. Back to, okay, so we got rid of item one. Actually, I have this old business. You're finishing off your report.
We just have questions. He's already gave his report, and I have a question.
Yes.
As far as the utilities, because that's actually talking about having the utilities incorporated incentive by sort of financing. Is that correct?
Yes.
Have you reached out to anybody from financing?
No, with the exception of speaking to you and also speaking to a representative at the...
Because I would definitely bring it up if it's feasible. I don't know if it's actually feasible.
Well, you know, I reached out to Albany, actually, to find a legislative aide who could explain to me how it would be financed across the board, because there's a current bill being proposed in the Senate in regards to under financing for families and small businesses. So I wanted to find out what the details on the legislation. No, it's been, as of April 2nd, so it's still in the process.
This is all for you. These are all copies. This is a copy of a Con Ed thing that I'm not even going to read, but probably you want to give it to Carol Costigan. I assume you're going to point her chair. I kept trying to email this one email. Both of your accounts rejected it. Yeah, because it's in color and stuff. This is just a copy. I tried your Gmail and your Do It. Both rejected it. Although, you know what? Because Ed scanned it and emailed it to me, so we had no trouble emailing it to each other. This is...
Okay. That's it.
And so this is a copy. So I hope that we really do something with this information. I'm not stopping. You didn't?